Good morning. Welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, the Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I am your host, Ali Urban, and here's the news of the University of Connecticut this week. According to Jonelle Reynolds, Director of Diversity and Inclusion Initiatives, the Office for Diversity and Inclusion has been reflecting on the social identity awareness activity held last week. Thomas Alvarez of the Daily Campus writes that the Office for Diversity and Inclusion, the Department of Residential Life, and the Department of Student Activities had various goals in mind when designing the activity and what purpose it serves for the University of Connecticut in the future. One of the goals was having students take time to think about their social identities and reflect on how they impact daily life. The event was open to all undergraduate students who wished to reflect on their identities and personal experiences, and in doing so, they hoped that students would expand their understanding of interactions with people from different backgrounds. Reynolds said, "One of the main learning goals is awareness of one's own identity and how people have different identities at large. We want participants to reflect on how their identities have shaped or potentially can shape their experiences at UConn and how they relate to people from different identity backgrounds." Although the event faced participation concerns because of the short time between advertising and the event, students provided the office with useful feedback to improve the event itself and future participation. The social identity awareness activity will be offered to FYE courses and other student organizations and departments upon request. Reynolds said that the office plans to engage other areas like athletics, Greek life, student organizations, and departments. Daily Campus correspondent Connor Caridad reports that the 93 residents of Belden Hall in alumni housing at the University of Connecticut were placed under quarantine effective 4 p.m. last Friday after an increase of COVID-19 cases in the building. UConn Student Health and Wellness, SHAW, Medical Director Alyssa Ehrer, MD, made an announcement notifying students about the concerning increasing trend of positive COVID-19 cases among students in the residence halls in the last week. "The rate of spread is disproportionate to the number of positive cases seen among other residential locations, and Belden Hall residents will have to follow the guidelines specified by the SHAW immediately. Students are not permitted to have guests, attend in-person classes, and will be tested twice a week. The quarantine order will last 14 days at the very least, and whether or not the guidelines are dropped will depend on if there's a clear downward trend in COVID-19 transmission." The residents of Eddy Hall in alumni housing were also placed under quarantine after 4 students tested positive for COVID-19. 80% of Eddy Hall residents have been tested in the past week, and no new cases have appeared in the past 3 days. The university lifted the quarantine order it had placed on the Oaks off-campus apartment complex following a significant decrease in COVID-19 transmission. Dean of Students Eleanor Daugherty and Aurora thanked residents of the Oaks for adhering to quarantine measures in an announcement made last week. "The quarantine resulted in a significant change in the transmission patterns of the previous 2 weeks," they said. "Although this may feel like cause for celebration, the risk of contracting COVID-19 is still present. Your continued success will rely on consistently wearing masks when in public. A second quarantine period may be necessary if widespread transmission reoccurs." Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont issued an executive order last Tuesday issuing fines for those who attend or host gatherings larger than what the state has allowed. Those who do not wear masks in public will be subject to the same fines. According to Amanda Killick of the Daily Campus, Executive Order No. 9B authorizes local and district health directors, police officers, and the public safety departments of universities to issue fines for the aforementioned violations. This executive order is Connecticut's latest legislation created in an attempt to slow the spread of the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. According to the order, those who are found guilty of not maintaining social distancing or wearing a mask in public places where masks are required will be fined $100. Those found hosting gatherings larger than the legal specification will be charged $500, and attendance of such gatherings will result in a $250 fine. University of Connecticut spokesperson Stephanie Reitz said that the university will be enforcing these new regulations as needed, but that the UConn students have generally been compliant with the social distancing and mask-wearing regulations on campus. While of course the university will enforce the governor's executive order if needed, there's been a cooperative team spirit here to having a healthy campus, and we haven't needed to take punitive measures, Reitz said. As a result, the university has not had any serious issues or infractions so far. Lauren Shaler, University Events and Conference Services Program Coordinator, said that the University of Connecticut will no longer be holding an in-person commencement ceremony this October, as previously announced, due to the state's current guidelines for gatherings. Daily Campus correspondent Rachel Phillipson writes that UConn plans on holding an in-person ceremony for the class of 2020 when conditions permit them to do so in a safe manner. As of now, there is no estimated date for when this will occur. All options are being considered for an in-person ceremony for the class of 2020, but detailed planning will not begin until the state's guidelines for large gatherings are revised, and until the university is comfortable with hosting large, in-person gatherings on campus. Shaler said, "The health and safety of our graduates and their guests is of utmost importance. The university's goal is to have commencement ceremonies take place in their standard locations, Gamble Pavilion, Jorgensen Center for the Performing Arts, and Rome Ballroom. The class of 2020 and class of 2021 will have separate ceremonies due to the seating capacities of each venue. If the ceremonies were combined, guest ticket allocations would be significantly decreased. Students are understanding of the COVID-19 safety protocols enforced by the university, though many are disappointed and still want a proper celebration." Twisha Shah, a class of 2020 molecular cell biology graduate, said that the lack of a proper graduation ceremony has made graduation not feel 100% real. University spokesperson Stephanie Reitz said that UConn is looking forward to honoring the class of 2020 when it is safe to do so. Our very own news correspondent, Caroline LaCour, has the scoop on a new anti-racism course hosted by the University of Connecticut. Take a listen.
Hey, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good afternoon. It is going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Kind of quiet in my dorm room. Kind of an unconventional setting for an interview, but...
The University of Connecticut hosted their first week of a new one-credit course on anti-Black racism last Monday. The course, titled U.S. Anti-Black Racism, is available both for undergraduates and graduates, with a staff and faculty course to start September 28th. The 9-week course will be split into 9 different modules, all taught by a handful of different professors specializing in the corresponding topic. According to Dr. Shonda Davis, assistant professor of the Department of Communication at UConn and one of the professors teaching the course, organizing the course this way was a way to introduce students to other professors teaching other Africana courses here at UConn.
For the course coordinators, was that we really wanted this to be a tasting palette for students. Not only giving them a taste of anti-Black racism, meaning as a topic and in terms of literature and giving them some exposure, but also giving them a taste of our Black faculty here at UConn.
Caitlin Stiles, a third semester history major and a political science minor, enjoys the way the course is taught in modules as to get a well-rounded aspect of anti-Black racism in every facet of life.
History, right? I might be a history major, but I can also recognize that history of racism, not just at UConn, but across the board, is not just a history thing, and it's not just a sociology thing. I mean, this is a problem in law. This is a problem in political science. This is a problem in communication fields. This is a problem in healthcare. This is a problem across the board. So it wouldn't be appropriate to only have professors from the Department of History or Africana Studies, right? It wouldn't be well-rounded. It wouldn't really teach you anything.
The class introduces students to the foundations of concepts from systematic racism and anti-Black racism, Black-led and intersectional social movements, to Black agency and resilience, to name a few. The idea of the course sparked from a virtual town hall meeting this past July, When students realized the university had put in the resources to create a one-credit course on the coronavirus pandemic, but not one to address the unrest that sparked this past summer on systematic racial issues.
To your kind of first question about origin story, some of our Black students here at UConn, our Black leaders at UConn, had met, you know, with the president during a town hall hosted by the African American Cultural Center, and, you know, brought to his attention that, again, there's another pandemic that didn't just surface recently, even though it is certainly at the tips of our tongue and more immediate, but it has existed since the beginning, or since this country was created, and that's racism, and specifically anti-Black racism.
Davis notes that although the creation of this course was a symbolic gesture as a response to the Black students' needs, the creators of this course realized that this is just the first step.
That's it. If there was anything to glean from that, this is not a one and done. Neither would Dr. Embrick or Dr. Castillo Montoya. We would not have put our names on this if we were not rest assured that this was this class is going to be more than a one and done. This is not a Band-Aid. This is not a we're just going to do this one unit class and then it's just going to be offered on the books in perpetuity. No, absolutely not.
According to Stiles, she's taking the course not only to educate herself as a responsibility to understand the struggles of her future students, but also to use this course to spark change and have conversations with the people in her life.
Being incredibly ignorant, if I didn't take this course, especially as a white female, I think it's my job to educate myself, especially as a history major and especially as someone who wants to be an educator, because you're gonna have students who are different from you, and it's not kind to not understand their struggles as a student and as a human. So it's really important that, for me, I took this course because I wanna teach. I don't want to be an ignorant teacher where my students feel like they can't talk to me or they can't come to me because I don't understand how they feel.
Davis encourages any and every student, no matter what major, to attend the course, as anti-Black racism pertains to multiple aspects of everyday life.
So it is imperative that we have some foundation, some basic level understanding about how this society works. Black history is American history. They are synonymous. So just like we have to have, or we should have, a firm grasp on American history, we also, in the same breath, should have a firm grasp on Black history. And not only Black history, but Black struggle, Black oppression, and Black triumph.
For WHUS News, I'm Caroline LeCour.
And now for the weather. Today, there will be a chance of showers, mainly between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. It'll be partly sunny, with a high near 64. The chance of precipitation is around 30%. Friday night shows mostly clear, with a low around 42. Saturday will be sunny, with a high near 65, and Saturday night will be mostly clear, with a low around 40. Sunday will also be mostly sunny, with a high near 63. There's a chance of rain after 3 a.m. That's all the news we have for now. Now, we're going to hear a special interview with Andre Rudeljic, a singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist known by his mononym, Cerberus, and mastermind of the metal solo project of the same name. From this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the host and guest, and not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. So today we have my friend Andre in for a virtual interview. He's also known by his mononym Cerberus, and he's a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and mastermind of his metal solo project of the same name. And I actually met him in the VIP meet and greet line at a Ghost concert in 2018 in Port Chester, New York, and we've kept in touch since. So how are you doing today, Andre?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Allie?
I'm doing pretty well. Like I was saying before, you know, school is a little bit rough and boring at the same time, but, you know.
I'm thinking of going back.
You're thinking of going back?
Yeah, I'm thinking about going back. I graduated high school in, like, 2017, and then I ended up making the first record, but nowadays I'm just thinking I want to be around music all the time and maybe somehow work doing it more, because being an artist in these times is sadly, it's quite hard. But I figured, you know, if I actually get into the audio production, the engineering stuff, maybe I could like record other people or have them rehearse in my basement and stuff, because I'm having like a whole sound stage in the basement.
That's actually pretty awesome. So you'd want to go to school for audio engineering?
Yeah. Audio engineering and production, even though I'm sort of in tune with the production side of things, it's the engineering stuff, all the tech stuff that I'm kind of like afraid of. But I feel like if I learn it in the end, it'll be like more beneficial.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your Cerberus persona, how that came about, your musical background? Just give us an introduction to yourself here.
I'm basically a music lover at heart, pop culture in general. I love music as well as films and television, especially the very, what's considered the classic kind, you know, whether old or new, as long as it's good or it hits somewhere, you know, deep. I really like stuff like that. Or if it's just, you know, plain stupid fun sometimes. Like, I've seen Beetlejuice probably at like 500 times in my life, and it never gets old every time I see it.
That's too funny. I actually haven't seen Beetlejuice. I don't really watch horror movies, and I don't know if it's because I'm afraid or what.
I used to be, like, terrified of horror films when I was young, and that was the thing. Like, everything that I was afraid of when I was younger has become the very thing that I've become, which is kind of funny in a way, but it's in the best way possible, because it was like, you know, between Freddy Krueger and The Exorcist or Alice Cooper and Marilyn Manson, you know, they all to me were these, or even Gene Simmons was the first one that really terrified me as a kid, and Kiss became my favorite band. Gene Simmons Spitting Blood like terrified me when I was a kid. But then like I came to realize in my teenage years that I was actually on a very satanic route. Still spiritual though, like not in a bad way. To me, it's all art. All religion is art. Art that's been worshipped over time and passed down from generation to generation. That's why like I feel like when people compare, or even John Lennon himself, you know, compared himself to Jesus Christ in a way, saying how the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. But in a way, it was like when these rock stars started to come through, it was almost like Jesus came back each and every time. Young girls today think, you know, Billie Eilish is like, you know, Jesus Christ.
Or Lana Del Rey.
Or Lana Del Rey. Del Rey is really good too. I know you love her. I listened to those few tracks you sent me. Those were really good. I knew Summertime Sadness. I never delved too deep into her stuff, though.
Oh, good. I'm very glad. But that is very profound, what you say about the religion. And I think that's well put. How did these themes play into your music?
Well, the first album, it was more horror themed. It was more like I wanted to be very edgy, as like, you know, a rock artist would want for their first album, like the album that like their younger self would be proud of. So I made an album that was so raw and so more about horror and horrifying aspects of life, dealing with life and all that stuff, as well as, you know, stuff about imagery with the Antichrist. You know, I reference like in Second Coming, there's stuff from The Omen, like lines from The Omen, Born of the Jackal and the Image of the Desolate One. And that was all cool, and I still love that aspect, but this new record that I'm doing, it's more of a different direction, because when I started making the music for this in, like, 2019, I was, like, 19 when I started making this record, and I did all the instruments for that, but then COVID hit, and then I had to do all the vocals now, and I added more keys, and I still have to wait for Schwizz on the rest of the tracks for the guitar solos on the songs that he's doing. I also have to have my producer, Kevin Lacey, mix and master it. But I did the additional recording with this guy, John. But, the new album, though, is more serious and more personal, more in-depth, more to the soul lyrics. Like, stuff that I think, like, the world needed to hear, like, the message that they needed to hear, you know, from somebody else to say, like, I'm living this too. And we all just got to be in this together, you know, and be that light in a world of darkness, you know. Don't become darkness, become that light.
That's so true. I like that. So your music's like a gift to the world, basically.
It's definitely my gift to the world, but I feel like, you know, it's... Well, I hope people dig it, but, you know, I know that there's music that's not for everybody, and there's a whole thing in the world where it can be very elitist, and we've talked about that too, but, I mean, like, I used to be very elitist. I mean, I used to have that very, like, metal all the time attitude, but I knew deep down, you know, I was just talking smack, because, you know, when I was younger, I was a Beatles fan. I was a Backstreet Boys fan.
Really?
I was NSYNC fan. Yeah, you know, like, I actually, like, I'm a sucker for the boy bands. Like, I actually saw the Backstreet Boys live, but the thing is, like, their harmonies and the songs are actually so well put together. Like, I want it that way, and Bye 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 still hit to this day. And I could go on and on about some of their songs, you know, like, more so Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, but I loved those, you know, five or six NSYNC songs I listened to, like, all the time. But Backstreet Boys were, to me, the main, because I think, I don't know, they just had that really soulful harmony going, which NSYNC had a powerful harmonic tone in their harmonies, which, you know, still hits today, like I said before. But the Backstreet Boys, like, some of those songs, like Shape of My Heart, oh my God, Incomplete. I saw them on the Incomplete tour. That was right before Kevin left. I'm trying to think of songs off the top of my head just to be like, or even like The Call, or Show Me the Meaning of Being Lonely is probably my favorite one, I would have to say. It's either that or Shape of My Heart. But, like, you know, Everybody, Backstreet's Back, like, they're still classic today. And the production on them is incredible. They're just incredible tracks. And this is kind of funny, because to me, this is kind of like the reverse, because I watched a VH1 documentary one time, and it was like the 100 greatest albums or something like that, like a VH1 special. And it was a clip of the Backstreet Boys talking about the Black Album. And they were like, you may be thinking, you know, yes, the Backstreet Boys, but the Black Album is one of the greatest albums of all time, and we love it. And I'm definitely going to be one to say, like, Millennium, you know, like, it's amazing. I have it on picture disc. I have it on vinyl. I got it at Urban Outfitters. Actually, my mom picked it up for me in the store. True story, because I looked it up and I was like, wait, Ma, they have vinyl here. Wait, oh, yo, they have this. And it was, like, on sale, because, like, for some reason, people aren't buying these Backstreet Boys records, which they should. I highly recommend them.
That is so true. I actually went to Urban Outfitters a couple of days ago, and I picked up the Gatsby soundtrack on vinyl, because I got my record player recently, and I've just been buying up albums.
Oh, and that was the new Gatsby, right? That was the one, yes, with Tobey Maguire and Leo DiCaprio, right?
Yes, it was, which I actually haven't seen the movie, which is really bad. I mean to see the movie and read the book, but I've literally been listening to the album before I actually saw the content.
Oh my God. It was my junior year English class. We were able to read the book and watch both films, and I loved it. I thought Great Gatsby was a testament of true love. And then, you know, the guy, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything, actually. Well, the Great Gatsby, for you great people that have to study the Great Gatsby, but it's a great book. I actually, you know, out of the core classes, English was always my favorite, but I was able to actually take guitar classes in school, which was great.
Really? So tell us about, like, your instrumental background, I guess. What'd you learn first? Did you ever take singing lessons? Like, stuff like that.
Oh, sure. When I was three, what happened was I was in the car. I was actually in my dad's black truck. It was like this black truck with, like, the back where, like, you could just load a bunch of stuff in the back. And we were all in the front. Like, I had this little middle seat. My dad was driving, and AC/DC Highway to Hell was on. And he sort of looked down at me, and he saw that I was doing an exact, you know, 4/4 beat, and kept going and going throughout, and, you know, just being right on it. And he taps my mom on the shoulder. She looks at him. She's like, what? You know, huh? Yeah. And he's like, you know, shh. You know, like, he puts his finger to his mouth, and then he's like, look down, you know, like, and she looks, and then she's like, oh my God. You know, so then my dad set up the drum kit, but my dad set up the drum kit right-handed. And for a few months or so, I was playing right-handed, but then he was like, but he's not getting it like he was in the car. And then my mom was like, well, you set the kit up left-handed, right? And he was like, oh. And she was like, you idiot, you know? So then he was like, sorry, man, you know, and he switched the kit up. But then I was, in no time, I was playing, you know, normally. But now I'm able to kind of play both. But on a righty kit, I play more open hand on the hi-hat, but I'm still able to do fills and everything on a righty kit.
Interesting.
I'm better lefty, though, for sure. I'm definitely more comfortable on a lefty kit.
So do you prefer drums? Because you also play guitar and bass, right?
I do. When I was around 8 or 9 years old, I heard the Beatles maybe when I was like 5 or 6, but I was very into Kiss at the time. That was my first band because my dad was in a Kiss tribute band first, but then I went into a shop and, I think it was like a Walmart or a Target or something. It might've been a Walmart. And I saw, it was called The Very Best of Kiss. It was like a new greatest hit CD that came out. And I was like, oh, Daddy. And my mom was like, no, it's not Daddy. He's in a tribute band, but yada, yada. And yeah, and I got the CD and I never paid attention to the music. Like I thought it was cool, but like I couldn't grasp it like at that young age and I didn't see it that much. I saw it sometimes. But when I got that record and I heard Strutter, it was like, I understood my purpose almost. It was like Peter Criss to me was my start. He was the most underrated drummer there ever was, because he was in Kiss, which is an insanely popular band, but you'll always find people out there, especially drummers, knocking Peter Criss, and it's not funny, you guys. It's not funny. It's not fair, but still, it's I thought Strutter was just so powerful. That intro, just that, you know, just going right in, you know, and hearing some of those other songs like God of Thunder and oh my god, anything from the 70s, any 70s Kiss, Deuce, Black Diamond, he had the best voice in Kiss, this guy. It was like, you know, I love Gene, Paul, and Ace. And Ace didn't really start singing on the records till later. But Peter, like, had that golden, almost like Motown-style soul voice that was so edgy, though, and rock and roll. It fits so well. Because when Gene and Paul saw him play and sing, you know, with his other band at the time, I'm blanking on what they called. I think, I don't know if it was Chelsea. It was either Lips or Chelsea. He was in two bands, but it might have been another soul cover band that he was in at the time. I read it in his book.
So is there anything else you want to say to the listeners?
Stay true to yourself. Keep going. Don't let anything stop you. Don't let anything get in the way of anything beautiful or pure that you want to do with your life.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Andre, for coming on and speaking with me and listeners on my own radio show on Thursdays. I do have guests on from time to time, and Andre will be a guest next Thursday. So if you're interested to hear more from him, take a listen to that next week.
Once again, thank you so much, Andre, for coming on the show and speaking with me today. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. And thank you for listening in on this show. Thank you to the Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us, and thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Allie Urban, and you're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a wonderful day.